Can't imagine how I'm going to talk to my kids about this. To all parents reading this, please slow down and take the time to talk to your children. This is not who we are, and this does not reflect our values. Hashtag, we got to do better.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_beeble. We are doing another of the season recap podcasts in this show, the second last show we're doing. And today's one is the Houston Rockets, a team who obviously had a ton of success during the season, fell short ultimately in the end, but lots of fantasy value on this team. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
If you haven't checked it out, I just recorded a little bit before this one a reaction to the Dwight Howard, Timofey Mozgov trade, so you can go and check that one out and make sure you're checking out all our NBA draft stuff before the NBA draft. We've had three draft preview shows and a mock draft show as well, and there'll be more post-draft content coming as well. But we're going to be focusing on the Houston Rockets in today's show, the team that finished 65-17, had the best record in the entire NBA, but of course fell in Game 7 to the Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals after being up 3-2 and then Chris Paul doing his hammy. So we don't really know how things would have panned out. Perhaps they still would have lost in 7. Perhaps they would have knocked it off in 7. Maybe they won in 6. But it was a massive what-if for this Rockets team. They ended up, and we look at D'Antoni teams, and we think about the Rockets, oh man, they play super fast. Not really the case. They were 13th in the NBA in pace, and they slowed it down significantly over the second half of the season, and still had one of the best offenses of all time. They were clearly number one in the NBA, offensive rating of 114.7. That is, maybe it's actually the best of all time. That is a stupendously large offensive rating, and they were excellent defensively, 6th. In defensive rating. So for all your tired stereotypes and tropes about D'Antoni and calling him Mike Antoni because there's no D, it's a load of shit. He has never been, you know, his teams have never been consistently the worst defenses in the NBA. There's been a couple of seasons where he struggled, never the worst, but in general, they'd been mid-pack, and this season they made a real focus on defense and became the 6th best team in overall defense, which is clearly fantastic. 3rd best in defensive rebounding percentage. They got to the line at the highest rate. They took over 50% of their shots from 3. We know the Rockets MO, take threes, get free throws. 3rd in free throw rate, 1st in 3-point attempt rate, super efficient, 2nd in effective field goal percentage as well. Did so many things well during the season. It's just unfortunate we didn't get to see them at a fully healthy, run at things in those final two games of the Western Conference Finals. They took 42 threes per game, still only hit them at 36%, which is 13th best in the NBA, so it could have actually been more efficient, 30th in 2-point attempts. So it's really clear what they wanted to do. They executed the plan, and it led them to being obviously excellent at offense. Now, in Game 7, the 3-point shot completely abandoned them, and many people will criticize that decision to just be continue to shoot threes. But at some point, you know, logic would dictate that the shots are going to go in. They weren't bad shots. They just weren't going in. And I can understand all that. I'm not here to talk about all that sort of stuff from the playoffs, but they had a clear plan. They stuck to that plan and it worked throughout all of the season, basically until Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. If we look at draft picks for this team, there's not really much to talk about. They have pick 46. They lost their first round pick as part of the Chris Paul trade last offseason. That now resides with, with the Atlanta Hawks. I think it's with the Atlanta Hawks. Anyway, they don't have that pick any longer, as they traded away as part of that Chris Paul deal. If we look at their free agency, there's a lot to really look at here. Of course, Chris Paul is the biggest name on this list as being an unrestricted free agent, but there's also Trevor Ariza and Clint Capela as a restricted free agent. So 3/5 of the starting lineup could all potentially not be back on this team. Now, I think that feels highly unlikely. Ariza is kidding himself thinking he's getting $60 million in guaranteed money. But you know, this is a real, they got probably one or two more years with this team at this level. Bringing these guys back is not going to be cheap. Paul Ariza and especially Capella is going to be looking at a significant raise on last season. They also have some other guys on their unrestricted free agents. Tariq Black at $4 million. I don't think they'll be looking to bring him back at that price. Oh, that's his cap hold, sorry. And the three guys they had at minimum deals that were important players. Luke Marmute, Gerald Green in particular, Joe Johnson less so, and I don't think they'll really miss him if he goes. But what Marmute, and he's going to get a significant raise on this next season, and Gerald Green were able to do, were really key. And if they're able to bring those guys back, it's going to be interesting. But given they don't have bird rights on those players, it could be a little bit tough. They also have Markell Brown as a restricted free agent. Yes, he was on their roster. And a couple of non-guaranteed guys in Aaron Jackson and Joe Chi. I imagine Joe will be back, not necessarily Jackson, while RJ Hunter still there as a two-way player. So some interesting maneuvering that Daryl Morey is going to have to undertake. Of course, there's still always an option for weirdness in terms of free agency. LeBron, who knows what else they're looking at in that sort of an area. So there could be some significant changes in Houston. But we saw significant changes last offseason. Oh, I'm not sure what Chris Paul's going to do to James Harden. In the end, they were both top 10 fantasy players. Yeah, Harden was ridiculous as the season was the number one player all year until basically the last 2 weeks of the year when Anthony Davis overtook him and Chris Paul, despite battling those injuries and playing fewer minutes than what he had in the past. He did still put up some really, really, really strong numbers. Actually, I was mistaken on Chris Paul. He was the 13th ranked player, not quite in the first round, but still pretty bloody impressive. And considering his ADP was 14, he still actually beat that value when you look at his overall year. Let's start with Harden, who was excellent. 72 games, did have some hamstring problems, 35 minutes, over 30 points per game. He hit 3.7 triples, 5.5 boards and almost 9 assists, almost 2 steals, 45, 86 and 37, a true shooting of 62% for Jimmy Harden. There was a dip from the season before, no doubt, in his assist numbers, almost 2.5 assists fewer per game, but he was able to compensate that by actually scoring more, an additional 1.3 points in fewer minutes, upping his efficiency from both the field, the line, and from three. Yeah, big increases there, and actually took more field goal attempts this season and had a higher usage rate than he did the year before. Went from 34 to 36, which many people didn't think he would be able to do. Upped his block rate as well, but saw a significant drop in his rebounds and his assists. And that's part of the reason why he wasn't the number one player again, but he was number one for pretty much all of the year. So really hard to complain about James Harden. He was the guy that I had at number one before the season began. You could have got him ADP at 4, which was nonsense to me. So yeah, I was happy with that, being able to take him at pick number one in most settings, and got pretty good return value there. Now, if LeBron did join Harden and Paul in Houston, then yeah, you would have to imagine he wouldn't be spouting a 36% usage rate, and the 8.8 assists might drop to 7. And so I don't think, even though I was still bullish on him being the number one guy for this last season, if LeBron was to join those two, I don't think I'd be in that camp. But if they just bring the same team back, there's no reason why Harden shouldn't still be in that discussion as the number one fantasy player, along with Anthony Davis, for next season. Of course, all his advanced numbers were excellent on this team. I don't think we need to get too deep into what James Harden was able to do, because his season was clearly, spectacular, and he is likely going to walk away with his first MVP trophy. Chris Paul, as I said, was the 13th ranked player. Just turned 33, only 58 games for Paulie, 32 minutes, 18.5 points, 5.5 boards and 8 assists, 2.5 threes and 1.7 steals, and the customary Chris Paul efficiency, 46, 92 and 38 for a true shooting of over 60%. He did see some numbers change from his last season in LA, but it wasn't a massive change. He scored an extra half a point more. He hit an extra half a three per game. The rebounding went up by almost half a rebound per game. But it was the assists and the steals that had kept Chris Paul as a top 10 player for many years that did dip and cause him to fall out of that top 10. He lost almost 1.3 assists per game and 0.3 steals. And actually, the field goal percentage did dip a little bit from 48 down to 46 while upping his free throw. Still an excellent season from Chris Paul. He would also be hurt if, say, a LeBron James joined. But it feels comfortable in terms of per game value that he will be a strong early second round guy again next season if LeBron isn't in Houston. The injury concern is real with Paul, mainly because of his age. He's He played 61 games the year before, 58 this season. So it's not something that I wouldn't be all about drafting Chris Paul in at the end of the first or start of the second, because I do have to bake in that he is going to get hurt. This is just what happens with Chris Paul. He's at that age that his body is breaking down, and that obviously is a concern with his overall value when you're looking at that second round pick. So while I talk about guys being injury prone as somewhat of a bullshit thing, when guys are old and they're continually breaking down, that's more of a concern to me than young guys suffering fluke injuries. And Paul is a guy that I'd be a little bit cautious about looking at his value in fantasy, just because of that tendency for him to get hurt with those soft tissue injuries. Not too worried about things like broken hands, which tend to happen, but it's the hamstring problems that really become more of a concern. I could see things like groins and calves coming into play with Chris Paul in these coming seasons. The big breakout star for the season for this team was Clint Capela. He was the 43rd ranked player, despite being a horrendous free throw shooter and posting a Z score of -2.29, which is clearly in that punt territory. 56% from the line, 3.5 attempts per game. But if we punt free throw percentage, he goes from the 43rd ranked player to the 22nd ranked player. He averaged this season 13.9 points and 10.8 rebounds. Almost a steal, almost two blocks, and 65% from the field. Obviously, they are excellent numbers, and he was a key portion of what this team could do. He saw his minutes rise from 24 to 27 per game. He scored at a similar rate per 36, but more per game. The rebounding rate actually went up as well, and he was able to get his block numbers, which had dipped a little bit last season down to 1.8 per 36, back to 2.4, which is equivalent to what he did in his second season in the NBA when he was playing limited minutes. The free throws have shown a consistent improvement from 17 to 38 to 53 to 56. So steady improvements there, but still he is in that punt territory, and it's going to be hard to see him escape from that zone. Now, what is his overall upside? Well, of course, if you've got him, you are probably losing free throws, so you're punting it. Well, we're talking about a guy who, if you're taking him in the third round, most likely, or fourth round, there's still great value in being able to do that there for him. His advanced numbers are through the roof. One of the better defenders as a big man in the NBA. Protecting the rim, being able to switch onto the perimeter. Great defensive box score plus minus, excellent win shares, and win shares are over 10. Win shares per 48 of 0.242 and league average is 0.1. Massive PER of almost 25, massive true shooting. His advanced numbers were great. On the court, he looked great. Can he improve from this? Well, yeah, because he only played 27.5 minutes. Can he get his endurance and the trust from Mike D'Antoni to be able to endure longer periods of play? Can he get that? Absolutely he can. Can he play 29 minutes per game? Sure. And where does that push him? Probably into the top 40, irrespective of free throw percentage, and probably into the top 20 in a punt free throw percentage build. He's only 24. He is a restricted free agent. I can't see him going anywhere else apart from the Rockets. Teams will want him. He will be back with Houston, I'm fairly confident. And the contract, he'll be one of the guys in restricted free agent who actually makes big money. Julius Randle might struggle. Aaron Gordon might struggle. I think that Clint Capela is probably, out of the bunch of restricted free agents, going to get the largest contract, and justifiably so. He is really, really good at what he does, and we saw the excellence that he can provide for fantasy last season. He was a breakout star to me. He fulfilled that brief that I tabbed him for. Really happy with what he was able to do in this last season. Let's go to Trevor Ariza now, a guy who I was quite sour on heading into the year. He had an ADP of 65. I was avoiding him. I marked him as a downside player, a risky player on Basketball Monster. He ended the year as the 88th ranked player. I thought there was a chance he finishes outside the top 100, so I was probably a little bit too pessimistic on Ariza, but he clearly didn't return the value of pick 65. Still played almost 34 minutes per game at the age of 33. Well, he's just turned 33, 32 during the season. 11.7 points, 2.5 threes, 4.5 boards, 1.6 assists, 1.5 steals, 41, 85, and 37%. Like Chris Paul, a guy that's continuing to age, but he doesn't have too many of the injury concerns. Although this season, after missing only 3 games over the previous 3 seasons combined, he did miss 15 games this season. What he saw happen is his rebounding numbers dropped considerably. His steal numbers, which for the previous 3 seasons had been 1.9, 2.0, and 1.8, they dropped as well, and there was no corresponding increase in his field goal percentage, which many thought would be a thing. Oh, he's going to knock down 42% of his threes because Chris Paul's there. Well, he basically stayed the same. He went from 34 up to 37, which is an increase in three-point percentage, but this, the year prior, he was at 37, and his field goal percentage the last four seasons has been 40, 42, 41, and then this season, 41. So really about the same. Similar usage, very little changed. The expected or assumed increase in efficiency didn't really come. And we saw a decline in his defensive numbers, especially there with the steals. And that's what caused him to drop that ranking down from where he'd been 54th each of the previous two seasons down to 88 this season, because that drop in steals, the drop in rebounds, the drop in assists, as he just wasn't handling the ball as much, really did impact what he was able to do. Overall, advanced numbers, nothing spectacular. PER of just a bit under 12, and above average true shooting, bit barely. Win shares, box score, plus minus stuff, all fairly solid, but he's not a guy, you know, on off actually, he was a negative, which is a little bit of a surprise. He's not a guy who I look at and go, well, it's just a down year from Ariza. Things are going to change. He's going to come back and get two steals per game. He's going to bump that efficiency. I think at this point, we just have to assume he's a 41% shooter and a guy that shoots his free throws pretty well. I think something that I haven't mentioned is he jumped his free throw percentage 11 percentage points this season. He'd been 78 and 74 the previous two seasons, went to 85%. That's great, but gets to the line one time per game. It just doesn't have an influence. And you can see, in terms of net Z score, last year at 74%, he was a negative 0.22, barely below average. This year, he jumped it all the way to 85%, and he was a negative, he was a positive 0.21. barely making a blip on the free throw percentage radar. So while it's a massive increase, you go, yeah, great, awesome, fantastic, it just has so little of an impact in terms of overall fantasy value. And you can look, going from 1.8 steals down to 1.5, that dropped his Z score value in half, from 2.2 to 1.1. That's a 1.1 Z score difference, whereas that increase in free throw percentage, which seems massive, 11 percentage points, is only a 0.4 outcome change. So overall, even if you look at the drop in steals, which seems minimal, and the massive free throw percentage increase, overall, you're still losing 0.7 points of losing my voice, of Z score value, showing just how important certain categories and attempts in free throw percentage actually can be when we're looking at fantasy numbers. Eric Gordon was really, really strong this year, in large part due to Chris Paul's absence. We saw the games when Paul was out, and then we saw games with Harden out, then we saw games with both out, where Eric Gordon would move into the starting line, but more importantly, he would handle the ball more, and he'd see his assist numbers rise to a significantly large level. We'd also see, and he's an excellent free throw shooter, but we'd see in that time when he was playing without either Paul or Harden or both, that he was able to get to the line a lot more, which really bumped his value. And we saw him start off as a top 50 player, and be able to, you know, be a really strong fantasy guy. But when those other two guys come back, he was basically just limited to being a spot up guy, and that limited his overall value. Finished the year as the 89th ranked player, 18 points, really good. Three threes, really good. Strong contributions there. 2.5 boards, 2.2 assists, 0.7 steals, 0.4 blocks, 43, 81, and 36%. So some pretty decent value. Basically exactly the same value that he's been each of the past four seasons, where he's ranked 94th, 84th, 91st, and 82nd. If we have a look what he was able to do when he was sharing the court with Harden and Paul, he had an assist rate, which is assists per 100 possessions, of 2.1. So, you know, that's a decent enough rate, but it's nothing massive. But then if we go the other direction and we have a look at what he was able to do when he was on the court with both those guys off, it goes to 8.1. That is a 400% increase. Or it's a four, I was getting confused. 400%? Is it 300%? I don't know. It's four times as many assists per 100 possessions that he was able to generate. And in those times when he was playing without those guys injured, say like the last 13 games of the year, he was outside the top 100. And that was times when both of those guys were healthy, whereas early in the season, he was a top 50 guy. So if we're going to assume better health for Harden, or and say Chris Paul plays 70 games instead of 58 games, then Gordon will find it hard to maintain that value of the 89th ranked player. Probably be looking at a guy at the 110 mark. And I think, you know, drafting a guy high or based on what his rank was this season at that spot next season could be risky. Now, if Chris Paul leaves or if Chris Paul goes down and misses the season, then you're talking about a top 50 player. But there is significant risk in that. And if everyone's healthy, he won't get to that same level. I am very, very confident of that. He doesn't get to the line as much. He doesn't get those assists, and they're the key things that do help in his overall numbers. And this season, he got to the line 3.5 times after only getting there 2.5 the year before. But I can guarantee you in the games when he was playing or when he was on the court playing without Harden and without Chris Paul, he got to the line a lot more. Otherwise, he was relegated into a spot-up shooting type of role. They're the five guys that the Rockets had as top 100 players. And then there's a bunch of other guys who don't really contribute too much for fantasy. Gerald Green had his moments, 41 games and 23 minutes, 12 points and 2.7 triples. Another indication is you can find threes in many different places. 2.7 threes per game from Gerald Green is an excellent fantasy contribution. Nothing else he did really was at all. You know, no assists, no steals, limited blocks, three rebounds. He was a surprise packet. Is he back in Houston? Is he on another team? Who knows? But realistically, we should be looking at him as a three streamer. And then the other members of their starting lineup, guys like PJ Tucker, who played 28 minutes per night, still couldn't crack the top 200. 6 points and 5.6 boards, a steal, just horrible shooting, 39 from the field and 72 from the line, while Ryan Anderson was disastrous, only 9 points with two threes. Again, a great three-point streamer, but offers nothing else. 26 minutes per game for Rhino. He was overdrafted considerably this season. I thought he was a risky pick. That turned out to clearly be the case, and I don't think he should really be anywhere near any sort of standard fantasy leagues or even 14-team leagues for the rest of his career now that he has turned 30. He still can provide some okay offensive numbers, but we saw in those Western Conference Finals, they decided to dust him off. He came in and was absolutely cooked defensively and really was a pretty large part into why the Rockets lost some of those games with some of his defensive performances. He was not very strong at all. Negative 4.1 in terms of his on-off throughout the season. I should have a look at what his on-off was in the playoffs. I reckon it's going to be pretty ugly. Yuck. Negative 33.3. That is absolutely disastrous. Joe Johnson, negative 38.5, also bad. Luke Marmute, a guy who struggled significantly in playoffs, was a negative 29.3 as well. He's, I think we can blame a little bit on his shoulder injury. Now, he's had a decent fantasy season for your 20-team leagues. He was inside the top 200, Luke Marmute, 7.5 and 3. It's mainly the fact that he went 48 from the field and had 1.2 steals with a 3. That gave him that level of value, but there's very little to look at on this team and get excited about. The only young player I think we should look at is a guy by the name of Joe Chi, who I mentioned earlier, has a non-guaranteed deal, a second-round pick from the 2016 draft, a guy with monster stats in the Chinese League. We weren't really sure how that was going to translate. He came over here. He didn't really play all that much. We saw him knock down some threes in Summer League. It's really hard to get a full look on what Joe was able to do this season in the NBA because he just played so few games and so few minutes. In fact, total just 124 minutes per 36. Numbers look fairly atrocious. 6.4 points per 36 is bad, but 4.1 blocks, yeah. 6 rebounds, yeah. 18% from the field, not really something we should be expecting to continue. 10% from three, yeah. Unlikely that that's going to be the case, but let's have a look at what he did for Rio Grande Valley in his time in the G League. Played 24 games, 26 minutes per game. He shot 51% from the field, including 33% from three. He scored 11 points and 6 boards in those 26 minutes. 0.6 steals and 2.3 blocks. Had some good defensive moments, hit some threes, which that team is obviously, they take the Rockets philosophy to an extended level, and he showed a little bit there, but yeah, I think he's a long way off being able to contribute significantly in the NBA. I don't think he'll ever become a top 150 player, but he is a player who can stretch, who can hit some threes, who can block some shots, who can rebound at an okay rate. Definitely nothing spectacular and doesn't need to work on that. But the block rate is what's really enticing. But we're talking about a Rockets team that's going to have PJ Tucker, maybe Luke Marmute, Clint Capella locked in at those spots. There's also Ryan Anderson there. Joe's probably 3 years away from being able to do anything in that spot. He could also clearly, they could guarantee his deal and trade him off in any sort of off-season moves. And then maybe his appeal gets a little bit more interesting. But that block rate from Joe Chi is clearly pretty interesting. And the last game of the year against the Kings, he played 32 minutes. Scored 2 points on 1 of 5 shooting, but blocked 4 shots in that time. And that's where his value can really come into it. And maybe when we look at a guy that can that can hit some threes, maybe there's something there. But a 1.2 point average in his first year is clearly nothing to get excited about. Tariq Black, he's only 26. I don't really see much from him. Nene is 36. He just cannot play big minutes. He cannot play many games at this point. RJ Hunter, Markel Brown, Aaron Jackson, Chinonu Onwuaku. Onwuaku played one game this year. He played 22 minutes and scored 4 points. There's just no real upside from any of these guys on this bench outside of those top few players for the Rockets. I don't think many people should be too surprised, but it's not like they're going to be bringing in many high upside guys this offseason with only pick 46, and they're not going to be acquiring prospect type players. So when you're looking at dynasty value, there's very little that changes with this overall team in a positive direction. I reckon that will wrap it up for the Rockets. Give this one a thumbs up on YouTube. Give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And make sure you're subscribing so you never miss an episode. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network as well. Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify. You can find us in all of those places. One more season recap to go. And then we're on to the NBA draft. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Chris Paul.